right, this is Pure Decking, show number 280 for Thursday. I think it's Thursday. What the hell say? October the 12th, 2017. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out just how rigged the game is, and trying to figure out what Chinesium actually is. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Corsair's Outrageous, and I believe Chinesium is now primarily composed of North Koreans jumping over their border.
Well, for some other projects, I've been ordering a bunch of cheap Chinese electronics off of eBay and Amazon and shit like that. Like, you can get a small induction heater on Amazon for like $8. It's a bare circuit, don't mind you, but it's just like in some power supply stuff and a few things like that. And I've noticed like some of these boards have like bad solder joints on them or a component that's misplaced. My favorite was a little driver board that looked like it was missing a surface mount resistor. But the little surface mount resistor had popped off and was floating around in the anti-sag bag. I mean, granted, this shit's easy enough to fix, and, you know, you got it for, you know, a tenth of the cost of getting a U.S.-made part. But at the same time, it's like, well, this is either going to work great or it's going to catch fire, and I don't know which.
Have you gotten anything that's been stuffed with sand for weight yet?
No, but I haven't been ordering hard drives or batteries. Yeah, it's the external hard drives you got to watch out for, because they'll take an old 32 meg flash drive and flash it so it says it's got whatever the capacity they sold you was, and then put sand and bricks and whatever else in to put weight in the thing. And yeah, it works great for the first, you know, 32 meg you try to write to it or whatever the hell. Yeah, and don't ask in the IRC is the absolute point, is that, you know, it's so cheap that the surprise is part of the fun. So, you know, if you luck out and get a good part, fantastic. If not, well, you probably should have spent more than $5 on a power regulator, right? So
I didn't think my house would catch fire, but good news, I saved $20.
So that's when they're interviewing you on the news of the massive fire that you've caught. That's what you're gonna say. Oh shit.
Oh, I'm gonna say I am helping to spur the economy. I just gave firefighters, paramedics, and EMS job security, and here in a couple months I'm gonna be hiring a contractor. Everything's good.
I didn't know you were I didn't know you were an adherent to the broken glass theory of economics, but...
Oh, we're calling it trickle-down right now.
I'm pretty sure that's not trickle-down economics, but okay.
It's trickling down from my stupidity to everyone else.
Actually, trying to just fix some of these El Cheapo boards is kind of an interesting project in and of itself, where it's like, there's a heat sink in the way, but you don't want to peel that off because you don't know how it's attached. And actually, just as a fair warning, if anybody orders one of those heat sink and dual miniature fan Raspberry Pi 3 cooler combos, we're echoing. Madman?
I've got it fixed.
Okay. The tape. Check the tape that comes with them. Because the tape that came with the heatsink I ordered was not thermal tape. Well, it was a thermal tape, but it was not the kind of thermal tape you want to use on a heatsink. It was insulating tape. So, whoops. Yeah. And luckily, it was a valid 3M part, so you could actually look up what kind of tape it was, because I'm sitting there looking at it. It's like, this doesn't look like the right kind of tape for a heatsink. That stuff's normally pretty thin. This is thick and got, you know, a layer of foam in it. It's like, and it doesn't feel like thermal, you know, like a thermal pad. It feels like an insulating tape. So you can go punch in the tape number off the label. And it's like, oh, yep, that's insulating tape. Don't use that. Not on a heatsink. So... You know, pay attention to this Chinesium crap you're ordering. And if you don't know what the part you're ordering is, maybe don't order it. So, anyways.
And Bit of future mock etiquette. If you're using a USB hub dangling in midair, you might not want to hook a USB mic to it. The weight may cause it to occasionally unhook.
There's a solution for that. It's called absurd amounts of electrical tape.
Or moving my laptop a couple inches over. Or the solution I actually did, which was mute myself in TeamSpeak, unhook my mic, hook it directly to the laptop.
Well, whatever works, I guess. So, anyways, we'll see if, we may have an incoming Sard. He's, Madman, you want to hop up there and get him?
Sure.
All right. So while he's doing that, yeah, what was the, I'm trying to remember the brand name of the heatsink now. It was a dual fan, low profile heatsink for the Raspberry 3, and I can't remember what it was called at the moment, so I suppose I could look it up while I wait on them to come back down, but I'm not going to. So yeah, just be sure you kind of understand what it is you're ordering and give these circuit boards a good look. The other thing to watch out for is, and anybody in the 3D printing community knows this, they like to cheap out on connectors. So if you have a Ramps board and you've ordered one of the El Cheapos, you might get unlucky and have a connector that will melt and catch fire because it's not rated for the amperage of your PCB heater. It's rated for about half of that. So there they are. We have a Sard. Sard, what are you drinking?
Water right now. Gonna get a beer though.
Going for that hard shit.
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't know. Is it from Flint? If it's Flint, it's harder than what I'm drinking.
Oh.
And mine'll cause cirrhosis of the liver.
So, anyways, let's move on to our first, well, I guess the discussion story tonight. This is continuing something we've been keeping an eye on. After Cloudflare just unceremoniously kicked the Stormfront website off. Now they're starting to get in a little bit of trouble for it. In August, Cloudflare CEO Matthew Prince decided to terminate the account of controversial neo-Nazi site Daily Stormer. "I woke up this morning in a bad mood and decided to kick them off the internet," he wrote. "The decision was meant as an intellectual exercise to start a conversation regarding censorship and free speech on the internet."
No, bullshit. It wasn't. It was.
I was
going
to say, according to who?
And I want to shove them in the ass with a red hot poker. Be honest whenever you're fucking up. Because he was kind of honest saying, "I'm doing this. We shouldn't do this."
Yeah,
but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, in the article at the time, he said, "This is a bad idea, but we're doing it because we really don't like these people." This respect, it was a success, but the discussion went much further than Prince had intended. Cloudflare had a long-standing policy not to remove any accounts without a court order. So when this was executed, eyebrows were raised. In particular, copyright holders wondered why the company could terminate this account, but not those of the most notorious pirate sites. Ding, 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 I believe we all called that one.
Yep.
And here it is. Adult entertainment publisher ALS Scan raised this question in its piracy liability case against Cloudflare, asking for a seven-hour-long deposition of the company's CEO to find out more. Cloudflare opposed this request, saying it was overbroad and unneeded, and asked the court to weigh in. After reviewing the matter, Magistrate Judge Alexander McKinnon decided to allow the disposition, but in a limited form. An initial matter, the court finds that ALS Scan has not made a showing that would justify a seven-hour disposition of Mr. Prince covering a wide range of topics, so it reads. On the other hand, a review of the record shows that ALS Scan has identified a narrow, relevant issue for which it appears Mr. Prince had unique knowledge and for less intrusive discovery had been exhausted. ALS Scan will be able to interrogate Cloudflare's CEO, but only for 2 hours. The disposition must be specifically tailored toward his motivation not to use his authority to terminate the accounts of pirating customers. The specific topic is the use or non-use of Mr. Prince's authority to terminate customers as specifically applied to customers from whom Cloudflare has received notices of copyright infringement, the order specifies. Yes, yes. Since you've proven you can do it, now it's... Well, wait, what do you mean a court order? No, no, no. We're just going to send you a notice and you're going to do it. We don't need a court involved.
Oh, my God.
We don't want somebody reviewing and making us, you know, I don't know, prove what we're talking about. No, yeah. We should just be able to send an email as a form letter with a fucking XML file attached to it claiming an IP address and a timestamp violated the law, and therefore you have to kick off some customer whether or not it's true. And never minding the fact that when I worked for a school,
company who should remain nameless.
I worked for a school for a while and had to deal with DMCA complaints. We routinely got complaints about the fucking printers. Pretty sure they're not running LimeWire. I checked. Because, you know what? You can load custom firmware on this shit. I thought it was possible. But no.
Wow. Yeah, that's fucking terrible. I knew that was a... Everyone knew that was a bad idea. They even admitted it was a bad idea.
Well, I mean, you made a politically motivated decision. And admittedly, an easy one. Neo-Nazis, yeah, but... Daily Stormer... it's very...
No, it's going to come back to bite the entire internet in its ass.
Yes, it is, because you broke the cardinal rule. You actually censored somebody on the internet, and you proved... Because the internet used to rat around censorship. You used to be able to move somewhere else and get your content up somewhere else if somebody was censoring you. But as far as I know, the Daily Stormer is still offline. They got
it's
kicked
back
off.
Up. I think they found somebody that would host them finally.
I mean, they couldn't get anybody to host them there for a long time. It was because several large companies were blacklisting them. And it proved that if you piss enough people off, it won't rot around the censorship anymore. And this is just demonstrating that, you know, Stallman can be annoying, but he might have been right. old man yells at cloud. Meanwhile,
I love Richard Stallman, dude. That dude's so cool.
He's fun.
He's hilarious. Annoying. I love listening to any interviews that he does, man. That dude is super hilarious. He's
He really. Well, my favorite interview he did was with the Lug podcast. What was it called? Shit. I haven't listened to them in a long time, but it was the Linux User Group podcast, and they did an interview with him, and a couple of the guys on that podcast programmed for a living, and he basically told them that because they were writing, you know, code that was proprietary because they were getting paid for it, they were immoral, and he went on the show and basically attacked the hosts for not open sourcing every bit of code they wrote.
Wow, that must have been awkward.
Yeah, it was funny as hell to listen to, but I mean, he does that kind of shit. I mean, okay, he sticks by his convictions. I'll give him that.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, and he has a very little filter, if none at all, like you said, because he'll do that. Yeah. It was funny because I was just listening to it today because I don't know if you guys listen to Off the Hook, the 2600 podcast, but they had him. They were going over their keynotes, and he keynoted the Hope conference one year. And the clip that they play, every time they play it, I laugh because it opens up with him coming onto the stage and then immediately complaining about the Coke that they gave him is warm, and does anyone have any ice and shit? It's just fucking funny, man.
He's a gigantic douche. The problem is he's right about some of his stuff, so it's just like, I don't know. I mean, he just has no social graces and has no ability to even try to be polite in his views.
Yeah, I think that's why I like him so much. It's just hilarious to watch him in interviews.
Daily Stormer had to go offshore. They're now AI. Oh god, the Daily Stormer's now on my internet history.
And when they kick open the door, you just have to claim you were curious and you're sorry. Meanwhile, more questions are being raised. Just a few days ago, Cloudflare suspended the account of a customer for using a cryptocurrency miner. Apparently, Cloudflare classified these miners as malware, triggering punishment without a court order. LSScan and other copyright holders would like to see similar policy against notorious pirate sites, but Cloudflare is having none of it. So,
the problem with Cloudflare's decision to ban the Stormfags is that before, whenever they got a nuisance letter from anyone, they could say, free speech, prove they're breaking the law. After you prove they're breaking the law, we'll do something.
Yeah, our policy requires court order for X. And now it doesn't, because they proved they didn't abide by their policy quite publicly.
Right.
Yeah. Now and it's just, you said they did something wrong. And we have CEO evidence of this. Your CEO acted on, he decided someone did something wrong, rather than there's a court order saying they did something wrong.
Well, part of the issue here, and I've followed this for years with the copyright complaints early on in decking, obviously. You have companies, and government for that matter, that feel that they should be the ones setting the rules for the infrastructure of the internet, not the companies that have built the infrastructure and resell that. So this is why the moment they caught Cloudflare not abiding by a policy, they're immediately in there trying to set rules and say, oh, well, you should be able to block anybody based off of a copyright complaint. And, you know, oh, you block somebody for malware, so why aren't you blocking somebody for this? And you know, you see the same thing on other hosting sites. You see the same thing on domain registrars on Google. It's just constant, and it's always people who don't understand what they're on about or don't understand the network want to have a say in how it's run. And I, as much as I disagreed with Cloudflare for what they did, not anything to do to defending the Stormfags. I mean, we're calling them Stormfags, for God's sake. It's just the sheer act of unilaterally deciding you didn't like somebody's opinion and kicking them off the internet for it has opened this door. And it's a Pandora's box. There is no shutting it now. There is no going back.
I'm going to say the DMCA at least now have a valid point. The people they're accusing, they're actually accusing of breaking the law. The Stormfags, horrible people, whatever, they weren't breaking the law.
No, they were simply spouting unpopular opinions, which is supposed to be protected by free speech, at least from the government. There is no
protection from a private company.
Well, it's not so much protection from a private company. It's obligation to provide a platform, I think would be the way to phrase it. You know, free speech says that I can say whatever I want. It doesn't say that I have the right to go on television and say whatever I want, because there's no provision requiring the TV companies to give me airtime to go state my, you know, opinion statement, whatever. So there's no obligation to provide a platform. And, of course, business, you have the right to terminate business with anybody at any time. In this case, it's specifically for policy violation, but I don't know, because you're going to start seeing more and more people wanting laws set up about this crap. And that's the part that scares me, is once you start seeing laws go in place, laws are notoriously written by people who don't understand anything but law. So
on this, I'm not even thinking they're pushing for law, because the deposition, they're trying to fill out what the policy is, because Cloudflare didn't quote policy when they kicked off the Stormfags. That's one reason they were pushing for a 7-hour deposition of the CEO, is they're trying to figure out what the policy is and also influence what that policy is. Because since he's no longer using his written policy, which is a defense against anyone, they can now push to see what they can make the policy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just now it comes down to, like, oh, can we convince the CEO? How much money do we have to give him? And then we could take our competitors offline because, you know, they're infringing on our intellectual property now.
And at this point, I'm not even sure it's convinced the CEO. It's how big of a pain in his ass can we can be just so he capitulates. They're able to drag him to court over this and have him do a 2-hour deposition because of his fuck-up.
Yeah. Because he got a wild hair up his ass and forced his company to... That obviously went against their policy.
Yep. Yep. All right. So I agree mostly on that. I just hate that. I mean, that door is open. You know, it's not going away now. Because you're going to see.
Right.
I mean, no matter which way this goes, you're going to see other companies, especially infrastructure companies, be attacked on the same lines of you should allow this or not allow this. And, you know, you're allowing our competitors, you're allowing piracy, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I don't see that going away ever now. Because not that Cloudflare is the first to do this. I mean, obviously they're not. But, I mean, it's only a matter of time now before pretty much anybody that's a major infrastructure provider is going to get hit with this shit. And
it just sets a precedent.
What's the first U.S. one to do it without a court order? Because every time I've heard of it, at least in the U.S., they've had a court order.
No, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know they've been trying. I mean, they've shut down several websites, and usually by going to the ISP to get it done. So, like several websites have gotten eventually shut down because they were.
Well, I know the only ones I've ever caught being shut down, and this is narking on myself, streaming sites, but all the streaming sites I've gone to that have been shut down, they were shut down by the feds. Like, whoever got them shut down had to actually go to court, and it was the government shutting them down. I mean, they went to the ISP, and the ISP, I guess, technically did it, but they all had notices. The FBI or the whoever the fuck did this told us to do it, so now you can't go to this site.
Yeah. So. But yeah, well, I mean, that's what they want, is they wanted, that's what the copyright holders want, is they want it outside of the court system, because then they can abuse the hell out of it. There's no oversight.
Oh yeah, there's no cost. Well, it's the cost of an email rather than the cost of a lawyer. So it goes from being hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars to shut down a website to I have a form letter and an outlet for my electricity and an Ethernet cord hooked up to the web. I can shut down anyone.
Yep. That's a good way to put it. All right. Well, let's see. Let's go on to the next article here. This is from Ars Technica. Throw that in the IRC and into ye olde TeamSpeak here. Let's see. What are we talking about? Oh, ZeroNet. You know, I've played with ZeroNet before. I didn't think it was all that bad. I wouldn't mind doing some mirroring on ZeroNet, except it's I'd have to leave the machine on all the time doing it. I might look into that. They'd have to listen to get pissed off. Oh, ow. Oh, that kind of hurt. They'd have to listen to get pissed off.
Yes, they would. But I already have hate mail. Thank you very much. It is framed in my mind, and I love this man forever.
Yeah, we need more hate mail. Of course, I don't even have a feedback form anymore for you to send the hate mail. I guess you go on the subreddit, post it publicly there.
I should just spin up a Google email and give it out at the beginning or end of shows. Hi, send your hate mail here. I masturbate to it.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Next one is from Ars Technica, and Equifax got popped again.
Damn it!
In May, credit reporting service Equifax website was breached by attackers who eventually made off with social security numbers, names, and dizzying amount of other details for some 1.45.5 million U.S. consumers. For several hours on Wednesday and again early Thursday morning, the site was maliciously manipulated again, this time to deliver fraudulent Adobe Flash updates, which when clicked infected, you know, this is the kind of shit that you get into like bad WordPress blogs. When clicked, infected visitors' computers with adware that was detected by only 3 of 65 antiviruses. Well, all antivirus is terrible, so that's no surprise. Randy Abrams, an independent security analyst by day, happened to visit the site Wednesday evening to check what he said was false information that he had just found on his credit report. Eventually, his browser opened up a page with the domain centerblu-ray.info that looked like it's got an Internet Explorer picture with the fake flash update in it. He was incredulous. The site that previously gave up his personal data for virtually every U.S. person with credit history was once again under the influence of attackers, this time trying to trick Equifax visitors and installing crapware semantic calls, Adware Erosio. Knowing a thing or two about drive-by campaigns, Abrams figured out that the chances were slim he'd see the download on the follow-on visits. To fly under the radar, attackers frequently serve the downloads only to a select number of visitors and then only once. He tried anyway, and to his amazement, he encountered a bogus flash download links on at least three subsequent visits. The pictures above of his post is the high-resolution screenshot he captured during one visit. He also provided the video below, shows Equifax page redirecting the browser to at least four domains before finally opening up the flash download on the same centerblu-ray.info page. Oh, shit.
So, everyone, your shit is out there. It's partially Equifax's fault. There is no saving your credit. Put a stop on it. Watch everything.
Well, apparently, if you went on the personal credit check on a cell phone, it'd take you to a LuxSupply.club and say that you could win an iPhone X. So for filling out the...
Oh, yeah. Nice. That's so handy.
Just, yeah, I mean, they're just, at this point, the people who took over their web servers are just having fun. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah, it's terrible, but not surprising.
Can I be surprised? Can I try to be surprised? These people are making billions.
Yeah.
They can afford to hire six people with functioning brains to take care of their website.
That's the fucking problem, dude.
Well, actually, you know, I was talking with some people at work earlier today, and they were like, do you think Equifax is going to survive all this? And I had to say, yeah. If they were in a market that actually had competition and actually had...
Yeah, exactly.
But they've got the resources. They've got very little competition. They've got a shit ton of money. At worst, what'll happen is they'll change their company name. They will, you know, stage a buyout by a shell company owned by the same people, and the company name will change from Equifax to Equifax, not the people who gave your shit away. And say, oh, it's all new, it's under new management, and they'll change the name, and it'll be the same shit, and nothing will actually change. The fact that they lost some of their C-level execs over some of these breaches, apparently not mattering. You would think that would cause, you know, whoever's running some of this stuff to maybe reconsider how they operate.
Covered their severance packages, dude. Yeah. That is not, I'm going to rethink my life choices. That's, I'm going to Tahiti, where I can bang teenage beach bodies for the next 30 years of my life before finding another job.
Unfortunately, I think you're correct.
Yeah, the CEO didn't lose any of the money he already had, and then walked away with $20 million on top of his already plush paycheck. That's not, I need to rethink my life. That's, I made all the right decisions, so that even when I fuck up, I'm richer than most of the people on the planet.
Exactly.
And they obviously fucked up good, so...
Yeah, the only way anyone's ever going to actually start taking security seriously, and I hate to say it because a lot of these are like low-level IT people that are going to end up in jail. Somebody has to go to jail, or some exec has to be bankrupted and thrown into the poorhouse and then possibly put in jail. That's the only way security is going to be taken seriously.
Well, that's, you're probably right, and that's sad.
Extremely sad. I don't know what else to say, though.
No, I think he's right.
How can they not get in trouble?
Yeah. If the feds went in and just be like, okay, from now on, executives at any company are responsible for the actions of the company. And by responsible, they can actually go after their private wealth the way we used to. That's going to make it where executives will care, and then companies will care because their bosses care.
It's like the people writing checks said, don't fuck up. Well,
yeah, I mean, I can't fuck up now. These guys are writing checks. And once the millionaires at the top can say, are told, if you fuck up bad enough, you will not be a millionaire anymore. We're taking your houses, we're taking your checking account, we're taking your retirement fund to pay for your fuck up. When somebody at the bottom says, we need to do X to secure our network, they're going to give this guy his due, listen to him, and make a rational, informed decision as to whether or not he's right. Because right now they're just looking at, how much are we going to lose if we get caught with this fuck up? How much is it going to cost to fix this fuck up? Okay, let's not fix the fuck up.
Well, that's one interesting thing about my current job is all of management's on board. Now I've just got to get the culture shifted, so.
That's always the toughest part.
Yeah, I got management convinced, even got them to spend money, which, you know, that's like, you know, magic tricks right there. But, yeah, I'm still dealing with sysadmins who claim that their Windows boxes have never been hacked, therefore they don't need to patch them.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Dykros, they don't have enough stock to pay damages to the Americans that they know they fucked up.
That's why they bought a credit monitoring service, so they could just, you know, say, here's the service we provide to, you know, here's your free credit monitoring, you know, brought to you by a service we just bought out so we can give it away.
Yeah.
I think they should at the very least be required to go with the credit monitoring service I choose and then pay them. Like a lump sum for so many years of credit monitoring.
Boy, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah, that'll never happen. But
like,
that's...
you have to pay, I don't know, LifeLock for 5 years of my credit monitoring.
They'd go buy LifeLock if they had enough people doing it. Anyways, next article is from the Register. A Washington, D.C. judge has told U.S. District or U.S. Department of Justice it does not have the right to rummage through the files of an anti-Trump government or anti-Trump protest website, and has ordered the .org site's hosting company to protect the identities of its users. Chief Judge Robert E. Moren issued the revised order Tuesday, following a high-profile back and forth between the site's hosting business, DreamHost, and prosecutors over what details Uncle Sam was entitled to with respect to the DisruptJ20.org website. The site was used to organize public protests and demonstrations against the telecelebrity-turned-president on his inauguration day in January. What? Oh, okay, I got it. Yeah, I was trying to figure out what the hell he meant. It's the writer doesn't like Trump. So, yeah, Disrupt 20. So they were trying to organize protests during the inauguration. Okay, that makes more sense. It was trying to... This shit's badly written. A week later, following riot and property damage, DreamHost received a grand jury subpoena demanding it hand over details of those who had created profile pages on the .org and contact... and any contact and payment details related to them an order the company complied with. 6 months later, however, DreamHost received another request from the DOJ, a search request for all contact information, email content, photos, and all of the 1.3 million IP addresses of anyone who merely visited the protest webpage. It's a lot of people under suspicion simply for visiting a website. DreamHost went public with its concerns and told the Register that the request was unlike we'd seen before in 20 years of web hosting. They refused to hand the details over, sparking a motion to compel from Uncle Sam's lawyers, which DreamHost refused. Chief Justice Morin listened to both sides of the argument. Dreamhost claimed the demand broke the First and Fourth Amendments and was tantamount to political persecution, and the DOG claimed it needed the information to continue its investigation into criminal acts and decided in August that Dreamhost must hand over the information, but with important caveats. Minimization. First, the DOJ was told it to narrow its search warrant to include only registered users of the website, and second, the judge introduced a minimization plan in which the government had to name the investigators that would have access to the data and list the methods they will use. In addition, the court said it will oversee the search, and the DOJ must justify why it believes the information provided is responsive to the warrant, i.e. directly relevant to their criminal investigation. The DOJ would not be allowed to share the information with any other government agency, and the court will seal any information it decides is not responsive, meaning that to access it, the government will need to get a court order. This week, Judge Morin issued his final order on the matter and has fallen down more on this side of individual users. As previously observed, courts around the country have acknowledged that in searches for electronically stored information, evidence of criminal activity will likely be intermingled with communications and other records not within the scope of the search warrant, he noted in his ruling. Because of the potential breach of government's review in this case, the warrant in its execution may implicate otherwise innocuous and constitutionally protected activity. As the court has previously stated, while the government has the right to execute its warrant, it does not have the right to rummage through the information contained on Dreamhost's website and discover the identity of or access communications by individuals not participating in alleged criminal activity, particularly those persons who are engaging in protected First Amendment activities. So, in other words, they're still trying to figure this shit out when it comes to getting web hosting logs so they can figure out who visited websites and whether or not that's even criminal.
I think the web hosting logs are a stretch, but let's say this the J10 or J20, whatever. The J20 site had a forum, and on that forum they can show planning of the disruptions, if any of them were illegal. Planning of anything illegal. They should be able to get the records for everyone who was in that conversation or in that thread.
Yeah, but what records? I mean, just the forum records, or should they be able to do more than that?
The forum records, if you had to register to create the account, all the registration information you have. If you had to pay to create the account, then the financial records, so you can track down the actual people behind those posts. As far as anyone who's visiting the site, well, if I visited the site, but I didn't throw up in the forum, sure, I'll be involved at the protest around the Starbucks in Washington. I'll bring my baseball bat and take out some windows and possibly a dumbass. If I didn't post something like that, if I just showed up to the website, I'm not involved. But if I'm posting, I'll be at this protest at this time, I'll help you organize, and then that protest turns violent, they have the right to question me about how much of this did I know? Was I planning on this to become violent? Or did I just plan a protest, show up, and the black bloc took it over and it became violent? But they should have a right to question me if I'm planning something violent, and in this case, illegal. Because most of the protests at Inauguration Day, with the exception of the Women's March, none of them went through the process of getting a permit to protest. The Women's March was the only legal one.
So, the order lists a series of protocols designed to protect netizens to comply with the First and Fourth Amendment considerations and prevent the government from obtaining any identification or identifying information of innocent persons. The DOJ will have to tell the court precisely what it will search for and disrupt J20.org's files rather than just asking for it all, and must gain court approval before obtaining the data. Dreamhost will then carry out the search and send the result with individual users personally identifying details such as names and email addresses redacted to the DOJ, which will then have to file a second request to the court stating which records it actually wants to retain along with the explanation for how they were relevant to the criminal probe. The DOJ will then have to justify any requests. God, this is going to be a pain in the ass for them trying to do this, going through this data bag. It's going to be a pain in the ass for all involved. DOJ will also have to justify any requests that to have that user information unredacted, And the court will decide whether to grant that request based on whether there's evidence of criminal activity using the legal standard for probable cause. Therefore, it appears prosecutors can, say, ask for comments posted on the site mentioning smashed windows and get a dump of matching comments with any identifying information redacted. Next, the DOJ has to specify which parts it wants unredacted, and the court has to agree before any more data is disclosed. You know, as pain in the ass as that sounds... From a practical standpoint, from a legal standpoint, that actually sounds like what you have to do. Because each of these items could potentially be sensitive, and having the court review each individual one probably is the best way to go about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pain in the ass, but it sounds reasonable. It's like, we're not going to just give you the information for everyone that went to the site, but people that went to the site, and then you can show, did something further potentially criminal... we'll look at more of their information. It sounds reasonable to me.
It does. That's the thing. It's nuts because of how involved it is and how much the court has to approve everything. But since we've said the court is the ones who actually decide whether or not it's right for them to do this stuff, that's about the only way to do it. So, next article is from the Hacker News. The FBI recently arrested a psycho cyber stalker with the help of popular VPN service. In this case, apparently he exposed the company's lies about its no logs policy. Taking down cyber stalkers and criminals is definitely a good thing, and the FBI has truly done a great job. But the VPN company, whose first line on the privacy policy is "we do not monitor user activity, nor do we keep any logs," has literally betrayed its customers' trust. It's no secret that most of VPN services was claimed to shield your internet traffic from prying eyes, assuring you to surf the web anonymously or not as secure as they claim. Post-known era, a majority of VPN providers promise that their service is anonymous with no log policy, but there's actually no way to verify this. So apparently the company is called PureVPN. A 24-year-old Massachusetts man, Ryan Lynn, has been arrested in a cyberstalking case after one of the largest VPN providers, PureVPN, helped the FBI with information that linked Lynn to his alleged cyber crimes. In an FBI affidavit published last week by the U.S. Department of Justice, Lynn is accused of stalking and harassing his housemates and former roommates online while evading local police by using various services like Tor, VPNs, and TextFree. Lynn tormented his former roommate, Jennifer Smith, for 1.5 years after stealing credentials for some of her online profiles from her unlocked MacBook and other personal files, including photographs from her iCloud and Google Drive accounts. Okay, people, don't store photographs in iCloud or Google. Just don't do it. I know your phone automatically wants to back up your photos there. Temporarily, that's fine. Pull them out of there. Put them in something else. Do not keep nude photos in anything.
Unless you're a hot chick.
In that case, publish them publicly. But
yes. Happening, you know, 3 will happen.
Seriously, iCloud, Google Drive, all it takes is somebody figuring out your password and they get all of your pictures. So it just don't do it. So where was I? Lynn tormented. According to the affidavit, Lynn released Smith's personal details online, known as doxing, posted intimate photographs without her face, suggesting they were of Smith, and emailed her private information to her contacts, including her family, relatives, and colleagues. Additionally, Lynn allegedly posted fake profiles to her websites, of her two websites, dedicated to prostitution, sexual fetishes, and other sexual encounters. Shared information about her medical background that she never shared with anybody, and sent images that likely constitute child pornography to her family and friends. Wow! So, this guy was a scumbag. Suspect also made bomb, death, and rape threats. So he used her profiles, bomb threats against local schools, went into TextNow, anonymous texting service, cyberstalking, Lynn repeatedly accessed personal Gmail account, used PureVPN. So PureVPN helped the FBI with logs. The FBI then managed to obtain logs from PureVPN. What? FBI Pure... Oh, they fucked up the title. Okay, the FBI managed to obtain logs from PureVPN, which linked to the illegal campaigns against Smith and other former roommates. Further records from PureVPN showed that the same email accounts, Lynn's Gmail account, and the Teleport FX Gmail account were accessed from the same WAN security IP address. the company complaint reads. Then the complaint goes on to say that it would be quite worrying for those who believe VPNs are the best way to protect their activities online. Significantly, PureVPN was able to determine that the service was accessed by the same customer from two originating IP addresses, the RCN IP from the home address he was living at the time and the software company where he was employed at the time. Being one of the largest and most well-known VPN providers, Hong Kong-based PureVPN is used by hundreds of thousands of users across the world, which eventually handed over details which a VPN is supposed to protect against. Then was arrested by authorities on October 5th and found guilty 5 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release. So, you know, it's interesting. I wonder if it was not so much that, because PureVPN says they don't keep logs, but I'm wondering if the FBI went to them and said, "We've got somebody being nuts. Can you keep logs for these IPs, this specific activity, and help us track down somebody who's doing wrong?" Because I have a feeling most VPN providers, if you showed them a warrant, said this is going on, might enable logging if they have the capability to do so for specific activities.
I would think that would be up to their policy.
Yeah.
What, going back, and unless, you know, they ask their CEO really nicely and then they turn on logging. But that's kind of fucked up on that company. Like, I mean, I bet you they see a mass exodus of users, because...
Yeah, they probably will.
You know, I don't think that's right.
I mean, yeah, right on sending Scumbag to jail there, but, yeah, they say they don't keep logs. They probably shouldn't keep logs. I mean, that's...
Yeah, exactly. My feelings. I don't...
Is there a way to set up your own VPN?
Yeah, but then you're listed as the owner of the servers.
Yeah, you need an exit point that isn't linked to you. That's the whole point.
Well, that's what Tor is.
Right.
So, you know, that's why they had to wait for, like, Sabu and a lot of those guys, when they caught them, they actually had to wait for them to make a operational error to expose who they were by, say, connecting to the IRC with the wrong username from a not Tor address to catch them. And you know, you hear about, oh, they've broken Tor. Well, kind of. It's more they've gotten better at linking up people who make OPSEC mistakes rather than brain fart rather than breaking the encryption. So, like, if I had some other identity I was maintaining on Tor or some other network, and then I accidentally used that username in conjunction with the Morph's username somewhere, then that might, you know, give away that those two names are actually the same person, and then they can go from there, right? So that's kind of how they get around Tor. The other thing they do with Tor is they'll take over a hosting, you know, the hosting of a Tor-based website, and then put, like, well... There's a bunch of different programs to do it. I doubt they're actually just using, you know, Burp. But, not Burp. Beef. The Beef browser exploit framework. That's one you can do. But generally, there's a couple of different ways to do it. But the trick is to get your browser to make some kind of a ClearNet connection to force your machine to give up its real IP so they can look up who you are. That, depending on what kind of setup you use, that may or may not work. probably shouldn't be telling people how to do this, but yeah, look into Hoonix if you want to be a little bit more immune to this kind of stuff. That's an interesting setup of Tor, but yeah, your average VPN, I think Don't Ask has it right in the IRC there, that just assume your VPN is going to cave the moment they see a warrant, because they're a business and they don't want to get shut down. I mean, some will shut down. Lava Mail famously shut themselves down rather than comply with giving up their encryption keys, but I'd say for most companies that's going to be rare.
And the Canary Notice, kind of a rare, the one company that was pushing it.
Well, there's also questions about how legal that is. You know, taking the Canary Notice down, because the theory is that they can't compel speech, but other people are saying, well, maybe they can. So that one's kind of hard to tell. I've already posted this link. Next article is from Torrent Freak. Founded in 1991, Epic has developed a blah, 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 known for. A few weeks ago, Fortnite released free-to-play Battle Royale game mode for the PC and other platforms, generating massive interest from gamers. Unfortunately, this also includes cheaters, many of whom have been banned. Last week, Epic stressed that addressing Fortnite cheaters is the company's highest priority, hinting that they won't stop at banning users. We are constantly working against both the cheaters themselves and the cheat providers, and it's ongoing. We're exploiting every measure to ensure that these cheaters are removed and stay removed from the Fortnite Battle Royale and Epic ecosystem, the company wrote. And it turns out it was not an idle threat. Torrent Freak has obtained two complaints that were filed in North Carolina federal court this week, which show that Epic is launching a legal battle against two prolific cheaters. The two alleged cheaters are identified as Mr. Bloom and Mr. Vesper. Both are accused of violating Fortnite Terms of Service and EULA by cheating. This involves modifying and changing the game's code, committing copyright infringement in the process. They're using copyright law to go after cheaters, saying, oh, well, you changed our code, and the code's copywritten, therefore you're making illegal copies. I mean, damn.
Wow. I've never heard of that being done before.
Yeah, the software that the defendant used to cheat infringes Epic's copyrights in the game and breaches the terms of the agreements to which defendants agreed in order to access the game, the company notes. The two complaints are largely the same, but both defendants are accused of ruining the fun of others. Nobody likes a cheater. Nobody likes playing with cheaters. These axioms are particularly true in this case. I don't think you should be taking people who cheated a video game to court, but, you know, defendant used cheats in a deliberate attempt to destroy the integrity of and otherwise wreak havoc in the Fortnite game. As the defendant intends, this often ruins the game for other players and many people who watch streamers, the complaint adds. Both defendants are connected to the cheat provider AddictedCheats.net, either as moderators or support personnel, and they specifically target streamers and boast about their accomplishments, making comments such as, LOL, I just fucked them, after killing them. According to Epic's complaint, Vesper was banned at least 9 times, but registered new accounts to continue his cheating. He also stands accused of having written code for the cheats. Bloom was banned once, and previously states he's also working on his own cheat. He publicly states that he aims to create unwanted chaos and disorder in Fortnite, and said the game was the highest priority of the cheat provider. The two lawsuits, which game publisher hopes to put an end to the cheating. Up to $150,000 in statutory damages for copyright infringement. The complaint further lists breaches, contract, and circumvention of technological means of as additional claims. I don't think going after them under copyright law is right. That feels wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're cheating at a video game. They're not like... It's like, isn't there like real crime they could be going after?
Exactly.
Oh, this is civil, so it's not taking away from the cops. The real crime can still go on with this, and is there a way to include anyone that was AFK fucking honor farming during Burning Crusade? Those fuckers need to go to court too, and jail, and raped.
What?
Wow. That escalated quickly.
wow. all right, well, tell us how you really feel, Madman. Shit. You think it's okay to sue people for cheating in a video game?
If they're breaking the rules of the game, they are defrauding me. Now, if the company wants to take on the legal burden of going after these fucktards because I can't afford to, yes. Anytime you are cheating in a video game, especially anything with money on the line, you are defrauding everyone else who is playing.
They never said there was money on the line. How is there money on the line?
Streamers.
This also could be applied to, let's say, the Overwatch leagues, where you can make cash. So this is a good precedent. Take their asses to court. Now, as far as using copyright, I think they're doing this because it's already has some precedent on altering code, and they're going for the easy win. I would actually say they're defrauding other customers and go after it as a fraud case. But fraud cases aren't civil. They're criminal, so that would actually eat up resources that could be used to go after so-called real criminals. With the way they're doing it, it's a civil case, so you're not taking resources away from the Department of Justice or cops. It's two people arguing in a court, and it's not taking as much resources away from our legal system. So I can see why they're doing it that way. If you're looking at, I don't want to take away cops from actually looking into something serious. And the way I would do it, they would actually be eating up cop time. And I'm kind of opposed to doing that to go after cheaters. Even though I do see it as defrauding me.
I don't know what else to say other than it's a video game.
Yeah, I don't know that taking the court is exactly... I mean, I guess if you're that frustrated about it, I mean, there really is big money tied up with streamers, and I mean, shit, look how much money PewDiePie made before he went all, I don't know what he's doing now, but he made a lot
of
money.
He's still doing streaming, and he's making most of his money streaming. He's also doing some comedy shit.
Yeah. So, the next one up is from Gizmodo. How Facebook outs sex workers.
Oh.
Lila has two identities, but Facebook is only supposed to know about one of them. Lila is a sex worker. She goes great lengths to keep her separate identities for her ordinary life and for sex work to avoid stigma, arrest, professional blowback, or clients who might be stalkers or worse. Her real identity, the public one who lives in California, uses academic email addresses, and posts about politics, joined Facebook in 2011. Her sex worker identity is not on the social network at all. For it, she uses a different email address, a different phone number, and a different name. Yet earlier this year, looking at Facebook's People You May Know recommendations, Lila, a name that we're using in place of her real name, was shocked to see some of her sex work clients. Despite the fact that she'd only given her Facebook information from her vanilla identity, the company had somehow discerned her real-world connection to these people. Even more horrifyingly, her account was potentially being presented to them as a friend's suggestion, adding her regular identity to them. Because Facebook insists on concealing its methods and data it uses to link one account to another, Lila is not able to find out how the network exposed. It's the like button on other websites. It's... Okay, seriously. Look at the JavaScript. It's the like button on other websites. They're comparing... They're comparing the responses they get from websites requesting the like button. I actually had servers break because I blocked Facebook to a data center at a job, and it turned out that hosting that like button, they couldn't pull we had Java code that could not pull that like button, and it broke entire web applications because I blocked fucking Facebook. So
that's fucked up,
isn't it?
That an application that doesn't have anything to do with Facebook but still uses Java, since you can't like it in a server that shouldn't be on Facebook, the application won't fucking work.
Yeah, there's some question about the people who wrote that as well. But my point is that it's the fucking like button is how they're identifying her. So, people, if you are maintaining separate identities, you need separate internet connections. Because people track IPs, source IPs. They put cookies in the browser. They track things like the Facebook like button. So if you are maintaining multiple names and it's actually important to keep those identities separate, you have, and I mean seriously have, to use separate computers. And if you know what you're doing, and you can do it with virtual machines and VPN connections, whatever. But the best way to do it is go get a burner phone and never hook it up to your Wi-Fi and only do certain identities from that device. I'm not even kidding. Separate devices for separate identities, and preferably separate internet connections for those devices as well. VPNs, whatever.
Yeah.
Facebook has done other things like let parents know that their teenage daughter was pregnant. That's one
yes,
of my
they have.
Favorite ones.
And you think I'm kidding. If you have a Facebook account, or in a Google account, and you log into them in Chrome, even if you intentionally log out of these accounts, a lot of websites will still pull your account information, especially the ones that use Facebook for comments and shit like that. You know, you make the mistake of logging in once to check something for a family member, and it's like you can never get rid of that Facebook identity in that browser from that point on. I mean, you can, but it's a pain in the ass. And, you know, Google's doing the same thing now where, yeah, you logged out, but you didn't really log out. We still know it's you. So, you know, because they're
going to have fun with this.
Oh, yeah, it's nuts. So, virtual machines, separate machines, Don't trust privacy mode in browsers. You need to build privacy machines. So.
Oh no! If it's like connected to your network connection, I'm just going to take my computer to some family member's house that have radically different political views and just turn my computer on.
Well, it's mostly cookies in the browser. So you might be able to, I mean, you know, if you want to live dangerously, you know, you could keep one identity in Chrome and another one in Firefox and you know, probably do it that way. But, you know, if you want to screw up their views, just hop on their machine and start loading websites.
Oh, yeah, they don't let me near their machine after I told them.
So.
Ever since the cell phone incidents with the Chinese, I don't have a lot of people that allow me to touch electronic devices.
So the article goes on more and more talking about other people who Facebook has linked up, you know, private activities and exposed, you know, people leading dual lives or trying to protect certain parts of their lives or, you know, of course, the pregnant teenager and shit like that. I think that was actually Target that did that, though.
Oh, you're right. They sent coupons.
Yeah.
I got to inform somebody they were adopted once.
Whoops.
Yep, they tried to cash a check.
So, anyways, not a fan of just how crazy these companies are getting about keeping your identity and maintaining, trying to record everything you do. It's kind of bullshit. To the point that I'm fully say, keep multiple devices. You know, if you want to do Facebook, that's great. Have the Facebook machine. And don't do anything... I don't know.
Well, her issue is she wanted to do Facebook as two different people and not have those two different people overlap.
No, she didn't. She only wanted one Facebook account. She said she maintained a separate... She didn't even keep a separate Facebook account for working as a sex worker, but it started recommending her clients as people she knew.
Oh... I thought she had a Facebook sex worker account, too.
No,
oh, that's
didn't.
Even better.
Yeah, it started going to like people she had... she started going to her Johns and saying, is this somebody you know or you want to be friends with them?
We think you would get along with this person. I'm like, yeah, I get along with him great for $4,000 an hour. I don't want to go have a beer with him.
So,
hey, we think you might have blown this guy. Do you know him?
His lips, the lipstick stains on his penis. That's the shave he bought last week.
No word yet on whether or not the Johns were using fake names too. So, anyways, yeah, but I'm not kidding. If you've ever logged into Facebook, it is on a browser unless you completely flush everything out of that browser. And I don't just mean the regular cookies; I mean the flash cookies and. You know, you have to really sanitize the thing to get rid of the Google and the Facebook logins. And I'm sure Twitter and others are doing it too. I mean, they really, really don't want to give up that, you know, once they figured out who you are, they really don't want to give that up.
Yeah, because that's their cash cow, right? I mean, that's how they're making
their
money.
Like I said, I made the mistake of logging into Facebook to check something. I had some family posts because they were going on about it. And it's like, you know, we need, you know, hey, go look at this. Fine. You go log into it once, and it's like, from then on, every website you go to with a comment section that's based on Facebook, it's like, it links that account. It's like, I'm signed out. What the fuck? You know? But no, it won't let go. So I really just need to nuke this machine now.
That sucks, because formatting a machine is a bitch. And if you have to go to that extent to get rid of Facebook...
That's what it's coming down to, dude, I think.
You have to really sanitize the browser, though.
The fucking easiest way, if you're unsure, just reformat, build again. That's why backups are important.
Well, the proper way to browse the internet now should be, you know, loading up VirtualBox and installing a guest OS of some sort and doing everything. I mean, you can do seamless mode, so it's pretty, but just do it all in VMs. Because that way you can always snapshot, roll it out, blow it away. And that's
I think
what
I found a
to.
Use yeah. for Puppy Linux again.
So, Anyways, let's move on to this. Got two things for you in Digital Dojo, and anybody who was in the IRC last week already knows what they are, because when we decided to skip the show last week because of problems with the broadcast box, I went ahead and threw out what they would have been, and I'm just reusing those because they're good enough, and I don't want to have to find new Digital Dojo links. So the first one is iknowwhatyoudownload.com. This website is hilarious. They have bots watching DHT connections, and they pull BitTorrent statistics. So when you go there, it uses JavaScript, it pulls your IP address, it looks it up, and then it sees if it's in the database. And if it's in the database, it'll tell you what torrents they've observed you downloading. Also, there's no control. You can punch in any IP address you want. So if you happen to know your friend's IP addresses, you can punch those into here and see what they've been downloading.
Okay, that's funny.
We can pull up your TeamSpeak log and see what everyone does.
We potentially could. Well, okay. I don't even have to do that. Let's see, there's Madman's IP address, so 130...
Probably won't find anything for me for a while, I haven't been torn.
Nope, nothing for you. Let's see, who else's IP can I pull? Oh, there's one. So, let's see, so...
Guards over here sweating bullets.
No,
please don't find the midget porn. Please don't find the midget porn.
Psychros is clean.
I got my fake piss and everything all set up, dude.
I'm assuming Psychros is going through a proxy, but you never know with some of these, so he's clean. Let's see, who else's IP showed up in IRC here? There's, let's see. Oh, Juver's actually using IPv6. Fancy Juver. Well, we're not gonna do him. Who else have we got in the IRC? Oh, Sard is good enough to do the shell. So.
Fuck yeah, I've got a shell account.
Yeah, I do the same things.
I'm not going to log into IRC, fuck that.
I can always go to the TeamSpeak route.
That's why I have shells.
Let's see, client connection info for TeamSpeak. Here we go.
Yeah, I guess I'm fucked there.
So anybody else who wants to know Sard's IP address, I'm kidding.
Oh.
It's 127.0.0.1. Wait a minute.
No, how did you find out? Oh, God.
Oh, Sard's clean. So, anyways, who else can we pick on? Ooh, Fox is up there. Let's pick on Fox. Oops, shit. Sorry, Fox.
We didn't mean to do that.
Oop. Go away. You're not on the show.
He's probably going, what the fuck?
The fuck just happened, yeah.
He goes, what? Got moved back. He's probably going, what was that?
We were trying to get your IP. We didn't want to talk to you, though.
Oh, Fox is clean. I'm beginning to question this thing. That or nobody in our group really torrents anymore. Damn it, everybody just goes to PrimeWire now, don't they?
I have found legitimate or semi-legitimate sites for just about everything these days.
Let's see, who else can we pick on? Nope.
There's no interesting things in anyone from our group. That's kind of surprising.
Oh, are you still torrents? How far back do your logs go?
I have an IP address for RU, actually. Don't tell him that. I said that.
Yeah, you don't want to tell him that. He'll be burning this place down.
Hey, if he gets a plane ticket and shows up in my part of the country, I will let him burn a computer down. I was planning to do a rebuild anyway. Like, here, torch it, dude. Let's go have a beer.
I'm sorry, let's go have a beer.
Oh, that IP is clean, too. Although, here's some close ones. Here's some ones close. There's somebody who was downloading. So it says, okay, this isn't you, but here's some other ones. So let's see.
Oh, that's terrible. This isn't you, but this could be.
Yeah.
You're linking my shit to someone else?
No, it's just going for IP addresses that are similar because, I mean, there's no guarantee that your IP hasn't changed recently. Oh, this is disappointing. It's mostly people downloading Spider-Man and Game of Thrones.
Which Spider-Man?
Homecoming.
Game of Thrones, big surprise there.
So, anyways, Yeah, there's that.
Kind of fun to play with.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah.
I guess if you did show up there, you might be a little more concerned.
Yeah, well, it is kind of interesting there when, you know, you go up there and it actually tells you, you know, this IP address belongs to Telestra Internet. So it's just like, oh, well. So it's like, oh, nope, that's how I know it's the right IP. So anyways, the other interesting thing they have on this website is BitTorrent statistics. So they're actually cataloging what are the most popular torrents they're seeing. And, you know, top torrents, movies, porn, games, software,
yeah,
music.
Yeah, that's so. How places like Torrent Freak publish all those statistics.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's a fun website to play with, and if you have ways of getting people's IP addresses, you can, you know, have fun by saying, yo, I saw you downloading Rick and Morty the other day. So, always great fun for creeping on people, especially if you can get their IP address. Or they actually have a link on there for, like, generating a Facebook link that'll get them to click on it and show them what they've been downloading, so... Anyways, the last thing I have for tonight in Digital Dojo is actually really cool. It is an open source Android app that was published by SparkFun, and they got tired of people using their Bluetooth to serial modules in credit card skimmers. So they put together an Android application called the Skimmer Scanner, and pretty much it's a Bluetooth scanner that is looking for MAC addresses that belong to their known serial devices. And it's Android only, and it's in the Play Store, but it's also open source, so you can go ahead and GitHub and get it if you wanted to do that, or check out the code. So somebody could absolutely port it to iOS, just nobody has. And the idea being that because Bluetooth is fairly low range, that if you're not using one of these for a project, and you run the scanner and you find one, it's most likely in a credit card skimmer. Like, you know, before you pump gas, pull out your phone and run the scan and make sure there's not a skimmer in the gas pump. Or if you use, like, one of those movie, what is it, Redbox or yeah, something else like that, you can try to see if there's a credit card skimmer in there before you swipe your card. And
that's cool.
It's not guaranteed to fight all skimmers, but any that use a SparkFun module, and that's apparently a lot of them. So, you know, is it perfect? No, of course not. Nothing is. But, you know, if you run the scanner and it comes up and says, hey, there's a skimmer in range and you're in line in a grocery store, you might just want to leave. Just like, no, you know what? This thing says there's a credit card skimmer somewhere in here. I just don't want to take that risk. And you'll probably confuse the hell out of their cash register, but, you know, nobody cares. Or if you pull up to the gas pump and you run this thing and it pops up and says, hey, there might be a skimmer out here, just go find another gas station. Just, you know, why take the risk? I mean, sure, your credit card's probably going to get popped at some point anyways. Just, you know, thanks Equifax, but... you don't have to make it that easy.
Right. I think this company should get like an awesome company award.
SparkFun, yeah, they do a good job.
Yeah,
SparkFun,
they
do
cool.
good stuff. But I mean, they've actually gotten they've actually gotten subpoenas in the past because people would rip apart these credit card skimmers and find their hardware in it. Well, they're an electronics manufacturer. They sell hobby kits, and you know, it just happened to be that you know people would use their hardware because it was cheaper. And easier to use their modules to build these skimmers than, you know, actually having their own circuit silk screen and shit like that. So, you know, it's not that it's as much that they were asked what can they do about people using their hardware than anything, because they sell generic electronics modules. It's not their fault people are using them for bad things. So, but yeah, I think this is awesome. So I want to make more people aware of it because it's just good to know, and you know it's also fun to poke fun at the iOS people who can't run it. So at least that's what I've been doing when I tell people about it. It's like, oh, you're not an iPhone. Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm always on board for that.
So, anyways, that's all I really have this week. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit are the best places to get a hold of us. And Sard, we can't call it future news. Closing thoughts.
Better look into freezing your credit, because everyone knows it's out there now, and fucking credit system needs to die and make something new. And have you guys seen that? I forget which country it was, but they have like public and private keys Like they have like a little dongle or something that they give all their citizens, and that's how they identify, you know, who you are on their taxes and things like that. It's
No, but
actually a
it sounds like
public.
a really good idea.
Yeah, I forget. It was some European country like Norway or Finland or something like that.
They're actually
Anyways.
using public private key crypto to do identification?
Yeah, it looked fucking
Damn.
cool.
That's actually smart. That's a good way to
Yeah.
go.
I'll have to find a story on that. Maybe next week talk about it.
Yeah. Madman, closing thoughts.
I'm wondering how the possible ruling of the Supreme Court is going to affect JavaScript's Facebook's like button. Because here in a couple of months, the Supreme Court could rule you own your personal information. Look,
Well,
how many
Facebook will just.
applications outside of Facebook are going to be killed when they can't use the like button?
Oh, they're not going to be killed. They're just going to change their terms of service to say that, by loading the like button, you give us the right to collect this information. It's like, well, I never had a chance to operate out of it. Yeah, about that. They're going to have to get sued into the ground before they actually care about that. So, should we pop Fox down here and ask him for his closing thoughts? I mean, he did.
He was kind of
Randomly,
a guest.
yeah. Just pop him down and be like, dude, so tell us right now. Go off the top of your head.
I would, but his microphone's muted, so there's no guarantee he's actually at his at the desk.
Oh man, what a party pooper.
Yeah. You'll say if he wasn't muted, we'd pop him down here. I mean, he was on the server, he got a what the out for just a second. So anyways, that's all we got. Yeah, where's the there's the Pac-Man sound.
Thank you, Time Master.